This is the BBC Home Service, the labor exchange of the entertainment world, folks.
As the result of the last BBC general election, we present the BBC's own working class announcer from Seven Oaks, lovely borrowing, Bob Todd.
Thank you. And I mean that most sincerely. Tonight's wireless show is being broadcast from a bonded grandmother-hitting warehouse in Poker's Lane. Tonight's audience consists entirely of GPO workers, many of them still living. Let us pick out a postman at random. Tell me, merry old postman, what is your name?
Jeremiah Fucker Nutclip. But the I is silent, as in looking.
That's a very unusual name. Are you in the phone book?
No, I'm here. He's a twit, isn't he?
Tell me, Mr. Thucker.
Yes?
Nutplit, with the eyes silent, as in looking. What makes a man join the GPO?
Unhappy home life, sir.
Tell me, cheery old postman of old England, how long have you been a GPO employee?
I'm not in the GPO. Or the... I bunked in here on the sly, disguised as a professional listener. No, I'm a full-time C of E vicar's mate.
There's no such job.
Oh, in there? I wonder why I've been out so long. And now my impression of that airy son of fun, Spine Milling. Hi! A complete change of character and underwear, folks. Next, my impression of the man who was the model for the Albert Hall. That well-known portable brandy still, Mr. Meals on Legs. He sings to a small 1,500 weight of steam pudding. Neddy, I'm getting slimmer. Sigurd!
For you folks. It's me again, nice folks. Me, your own little nice, Neddy Seagoon back from the dead.
You're not staying long, are you?
I know that. I know that cutty, hairy face. The man who wrote The Secrets of Gandhi's Loincloth.
I won't tell
it's you. It's you. It's Miss Mailbody of 1902 in his transparent plastic kilt. My old goon show mate. Spine Millington.
What?
Don't spoil him, folks. He's gone off. Well, Spine. How nice to see you looking so ill. Pull my finger.
That finger was loaded. And now place that great boiling nut of yours on this anvil.
Okay.
First, I hit it with this packet of margarine. Oh, good. Now I hit you lightly with this iron shovel. There. Can you tell the difference?
Yes.
Good. And you win this pair of rust-proof chocolate Roman Catholic whistling alligator shoes. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Housewives, nervous, tired, other children becoming an embarrassment. Then go out and get married.
Yes.
Come on,
marriage comes in three handy sizes. Quiet, normal, or...
Phew, just in time, eh, Mary?
The lead in that last line was played by Mr. Seacom.
And now my impression of a man saying...
I say. My name is 30 glasses of water.
You say your name is 30 glasses of water?
Yes, my name is 30 glasses of water.
I find that hard to swallow.
You'd be up all night if you did.
Hey!
Mother! Mother!
Yes. Tell me!
I haven't said it yet.
Oh, yes.
Tell me.
Tell you.
Can a lady with a wooden leg change a pound note?
Can a lady with a wooden leg change a pound note? Yes.
No.
Why not?
She's only got half a knicker.
Hi!
It was good enough for your fathers, it's good enough for you. Right next to me.
Stop! I am a great actor.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
That got rid of him.
Right. Once again, we give you your socialist announcer. Lovely, borrowing Bob Todd of Sevenoaks.
What about me, lovely, nice man of Wales? I mean, I'm a better actor than him. Listen, listen. To be or not to be, that is the question. Without the light, to win.
Without the cat.
Look at... Isn't Shakespeare in the audience tonight? What's happening?
If I'm going to star in your program, I tell you, Milligan, I'll lead bigger parts.
They're big enough already, mate.
How dare you insult me in front of the GPO men of old England? I'll report you to me. Do you know who my father was?
Yes, the Mount Pleasant Sorting Office. It needed it. It needed it, I tell you.
Now, stand by for the Anthony Wedgwood Benn Show. We commence with a potted history of GPO, or GPO, communications.
The postman, the GPO workers, slogging day in, day out. Work, work, work. Do you ever think of them? Now that we let them lump it, I say. Here is Professor Julius Geschassenhauser to talk about the beginnings of the GPO.
Well, first I would like to say that I dedicate my lecture to the brave postmen of England who gave their lives rather than work. Now, in the beginning of creation, the good Lord created everything. But by an oversight, he forgot the GPO.
I'll get him for this.
Nobody's perfect. I intend to tell the story from the early days of primitive GPO communications right up to the great, streamlined, modern shambles that it is today.
At first, the world was red hot, during which time there were no deliveries.
I'll get him for that as well, I tell you.
Centuries passed, and primitive man first appeared in the trees. One day he dropped to the earth below. Ow! Which was still red hot.
Almost immediately, boots were invented. Next came the first conversation.
Hey, hello.
Contact had been made. Later on, they communicated over great distances.
Friend! Years passed, and then...
I found that very touching, ladies and gentlemen. Very touching.
I'll write to Lord George about this, I tell you. I thought
he was a funny. Listen! This harp, this voice. Psst. Listen. Hear that sound, Neddy? You know what that is?
Yes, I do indeed. It's the sound of a thin, hairy Hindu man called Fongal Knots trying to sandpaper the buttons of a plastic Mac whilst whistling Ave Maria underwater and clenching an undented check between his knees.
No.
Are you sure?
No, no. That is the sound of the first GPO runner, the Greek Crapologies, who ran from Marathon in Sussex to Athens in Camden Town.
Who is that? Yes, I see him.
He must have news of the battle.
Good Athenians. I have a message. A message of life and death. The battle is over.
Tell us who won.
For 10 days the battle swayed back and forth. Sometimes this way and sometimes that way.
Well, who won?
Was it the Persians? No, not the Persians. They had the red shirts. No, it must have been the Spartans.
Well, they weren't fighting.
Oh, that wasn't them, no. Was it the Corinthians? I'll get it right.
That was the great Crapologies. To this very day, there is a stone tablet to him on the plain of Marathon. It says simply, Twit.
One Thursday in about 35 A.D., an ancient British postmaster suddenly became aware of the potential of the horse.
Hear that, Boadicea? Suddenly become aware of the horse's potential.
Ha ha ha!
which bit is his potential?
I don't know, but don't stand too close, dear.
But in no time, man had mastered the animal.
Whoa! 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 Hey, boy!
And now ye Gary Miller will sing ye song while we fill up with wine.
Not as popular as he used to be, Hawks.
Lies, all lies, I tell you, all lies.
Before we continue with our history of communications, we go over to a postman's training depot in Battersea, where BBC interviewer Mr. Helen Snagg is waiting. Waiting, ever waiting.
Hello. Standing next to me is Mr. St. John Thick and Mr. Arnold Sturs. Mr. Thick, you train all the young postmen.
I train them. I'm very well, too, am I up?
How lovely. And what age do you take them?
Oh, very young, you know. Yes. About 7.
Yes.
So that they don't really know what they're doing by the time they realize it's too late, you see. That's the principle we apply at the time.
Tell me, Mr. Thick, what is the first thing they do?
Strike. Down envelopes.
How lovely. And what do they strike for?
Practice. Oh, you need practice these days, you see. Yes. It's the only way to get a rise, you see. These management and all that arbitration talk. I mean, what? Hey, what? Bye.
Yes.
They all sit around sipping champagne and eating caviar.
Who?
Caviar, tall, thin girl with glasses. Yes. And... Grouse costing £10 a time. At the end of it, what?
What?
They say, right, we'll give him 4 pence a week extra. No, not for me, I'll tell you.
Well, what's the first thing a postman learns?
The standard leg test.
Legs, how terribly lovely. Do tell us more.
Well, yes. Each trainee, you see, is given a 100-weight sack of letters.
Oh, dear.
He is then asked to walk through a lane of sex-crazed, ferocious dogs. And the man that delivers the most letters with the least bites is given priority.
Yes,
and there. Bandages. And bandages.
Yes.
I don't know where I get them from. The next test is how to get a 6-foot-long parcel into a 4-inch letterbox.
However, did you hear me? However do you manage that?
Stand back. It's very easy. Watch this.
Oh, interesting. Look here, why don't you just knock?
Knock? Boy, that's a good idea, isn't it? Knock! Hear that, Jack?
It could be the OBE for you.
Knock! Why don't we knock?
You'll get
give him a
call
for that, you see? Give him stuff for them.
Now, the History of Communications, Part 2.
In the 19th century came the parcel post. During the war, it was a boon to men, women, and many others.
Morning, Mrs. Bogle. Parcel from your son-in-law at the front.
Oh, him. That good for nothing. What would he want to send me?
Any questions? In 1883, the GPO telephone arrived.
About time, too.
But think of the benefits of the GPO phone. In times of danger, especially. Just pick up the phone and dial 999. 999. That's it. Just dial 999. That's all there is to it, really. Help! 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 Help!
By 1870 and 20 minutes, the postal services were well established. Even the most distant homes were serviced.
In Carmarthenshire, one postman had to travel first 10 miles by bike, then row across a tarn, up the face of a cliff nearly a mile high. then by horseback for 20 miles, and finally 2 miles by kilt. Down a narrow mountain path till he arrived at the lonely Jones farmhouse.
Mr. Jones?
Yes?
Nothing for you today?
And now came the crowning achievement in the history of postal communications. The Wright brothers made a machine that flew. They have both been specially dug up by the BBC for this special interview.
Mr. Wright, you must have been a proud man.
Yes.
Well, how do you feel when you got the machine into the air?
Well, there's nobody more surprised than me and my brother.
And what did you intend to call your machine?
We were going to call it a spin dryer.
A spin, but it flew.
Yes, I told you. There was nobody more surprised than me.
Meantime, man had... For years, the Royal Mail trains have been a safe way of transporting money, letters, goods, and criminals. But recently, the Royal Mail and the Gapo suffered a severe setback, namely...
the £2 million train robbery.
This is a true story. Only the underwear has been changed to protect the innocent.
My name is Inspector Seguin of Scotland Yard. What were the events leading up to the great robbery? Well, doesn't anybody know? Well, let me describe the scene to you. It's tall, with a good head of hair, teeth.
On the night of October the 5th, Scotland Yard had been told by the charlady that the Royal Mail train was carrying £2 million.
Immediately, St. Patrick's Station was surrounded by police.
A waste of time, really. Time was at Euston.
We knew that. It was only a ruse.
Only a ruse? I'll sing that. Only a ruse.
He's learning the hard way, folks.
Seguin, this could mean promotion.
Oh.
Anyhow, on the night of the robbery... Seguin posted policemen all around Euston.
From every letterbox slit, a pair of policemen's eyes stared out. Whilst I disguised myself as a snore.
We'd like to mention that Mr. Seacombe does all his own snoring and never uses a stand-in.
Well, what's this bundle of Essie and Sackin with legs skipping on this bench?
What? Waking up noises. Oh, hello, Constable of London. I am but a humble tramp.
Move along or I'll belt your nutting.
But, Constable, it's a time of goodwill. It's Christmas.
Course, troops, so it is. A Merry Christmas, humble tramp.
And a Merry Christmas to you, Constable of London.
Right, now move on before I belt your nutting.
But, do you know who I am?
Can't you remember?
I'm Inspector Ned. Nice Ned of Scotland Yard.
What proof have you got?
This bottle of gin.
90% proof. You can't argue with facts, Lex.
Good. Now swallow these handcuffs.
I can't go round swallowing handcuffs. What'll the people say?
They'll say, look, there's a man swallowing handcuffs.
Oh, I don't like this part. I don't.
Listen. That's the Royal Mail chicken train. Driven by Percy Edwards. We must follow. Look. What lunk? Here comes an empty train now.
Where to, mate? But please, anywhere but Smethwick.
I'm sorry.
All right.
I can't tell you where I'm going. It's a secret. Now, step on it.
10 miles away in the darkling night, a band of masked, heavily trousered men wearing silent socks waited by the railway. We had planned down to the last detail the most expensive, the most daring, the most brilliantly organized robbery of all time. Tense, we waited.
Shh. Listen, lads. Here she comes. Stand by. Someone has blundered. We must replan. Humphreys, what does your watch smell like?
It smells like 10 to 12.
1 o'clock.
You sure?
Yes, I recognize the tune.
At 11:30 on the stroke of midnight, the gang struck and escaped with 2 mullion pins in money.
Hello, give them yon here. Who's that? James Bond!
No. I'm agent number HZ-1-3-2-864.
Ah, premium Bond.
Yes, sir. I've been watching that farmhouse near the railway, and I think there's something funny going on inside.
Why?
I can hear people laughing. Ha, ha, ha.
Yes, that sounds like laughter. Try and get a fingerprint of it. Are the curtains drawn?
Yes, but the furniture's real.
You must swallow your handcuffs at once.
Where?
It's an inside job. Now, I want you to keep hitting yourself till I arrive. Good evening.
Hello, sailor.
Madam. Madam. Hairy madam. Is there a man in here with 2 million stolen pounds?
No. There's a man in here with 1,999,999 stolen pounds.
Blast! That's not him. This man had 2 million pounds. Don't worry, he won't get it out of the country.
That night, there was a tip that the thieves were hiding on a Russian ship in the Pool of London.
This time, Anthony Wedgwood Benn stepped in.
It's 3 months of the robbery, another trace of the money. Have you read the papers today?
No, I'm waiting till they make the film.
Meantime, all Royal Mail staff were questioned, among them a man in a potato sack wearing a top hat and white boots.
What's your name?
Harold Wilson.
How did he get that name?
I got it changed by Deed Paul. I was paid to.
By whom?
A chap called Lord Hume.
According to our records, you were once put in prison.
Yeah, but within 3 years, I tunneled my way out.
What were you in for?
7 days.
Where were you on the night of the robbery?
I was in a submarine.
Blast, a watertight alibi. Hello, what? Yes. Lads, we've got them cornered.
Where are they?
England. One of the gang has split.
Oh, that must have been painful.
Is it the gang are going to get the money of the country by finding it from a cannon at Dover to a spot in France where the mastermind is waiting? Now, we've no time to waste. Pausing only to do a matinee of Pickwick and count the night's takings. We headed for Dover by a flying squad piano. Faster, faster, man, faster, faster!
I'm playing as fast as I can.
Change down to East Bank.
We're going uphill.
We are indeed.
The next scene takes place in torrential rain. So will listeners please take their brollies.
Look, there's a cannon! They're loading the million pounds into the breach! Stop! Stop! Blast! Blast, it's too late. Hands up and legs down. Got you, eh? Are you going to come quietly, or do the listeners have to turn the volume down?
Don't take a step near a Seagoon, old cobbler. Or I'll sing Come Home to Wales with an Australian accent.
You wouldn't dare.
We'll keep a welcome in the Valley Cobber. We'll keep a welcome in the Glen Sport.
Oh, no.
Your pair of socks will still be standing.
Oh, no, no,
when you come home to New South Wales again.
You swines! Just for that, take this. Tie my kangaroo down, die. Tie my kangaroo down, die. This Rafferty is a nit. And so is his brother Chips.
left my heart in an English garden
cupboard.
Sport down where the roses and white gums grow, blue.
My because I'm a Londoner.
Sport down where the roses and white gums grow, blue. Why because I'm a Londoner. Sport down where the roses and white gums grow, blue.
This week's workers' playtime came from an unemployed actor's rest home in East Acton. Mr. Spine Millington is now appearing as Santa Claus at Woolworth Chatham, and Mr. Neddy Seagoon is playing the lead commissionaire at the Dorchester Hotel.
What? I haven't discovered the 2 million yet, you know.
I'm sorry, Mr. Seagoon. The BBC have given you half an hour's employment and no longer require your services.
I shall be forced to speak to Sir Hugh Carlton Green.
My dear sir, everybody has to be forced to speak to Sir Hugh Carlton Green.
So ends the mystery of the great mail train robbery. The work of a mastermind, a man who, had he put his talents to good use, could have been the Prime Minister of England. The question is, who is this genius?
You're all going to find this hard to believe, folks. 1,945,000.
Man, having mastered the horse...
Whoa! 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 Hey, boy! Whoa!
Despite all the setbacks, we can still expect Mr. Anthony Wedgwood Benn to look the world in the face and say...
In the GPO show, you heard Spike Milligan, Harry Secombe, John Bluthall, Barry Humphreys, Gary Miller, and Bob Todd. The Grand Piano Orchestra, leader John Jezzard, was conducted by Paul Fennelly. Script was by Spike Milligan and production by Charles Chilton. Spike Milligan is appearing in Son of Oblomov at the Comedy Theatre, Harry Secombe in Pickwick at the Savile Theatre, Gary Miller in Dick Whittington at the Golders Green Hippodrome, and Barry Humphreys in Maggie May at the Adelphi Theatre, London.